RobZakariShow.com is fully functional. It's fully operational. You should go there and listen to old podcasts, because we've got a whole new setup in here, and the quality is phenomenal. It really is. And it's only taken us 2 years. Seriously, it's only taken about 2 years to make the quality actually sound somewhat like we're on the radio. So go and listen. I wish we did this a year ago. I wish we did it 5 months ago, because people who read our stories and then eventually go to the website and listen to the podcast probably turn it off within 5 minutes, because the quality is horrible. Rather, it sounds like I'm in a tunnel, or there's all sorts of drops, like pings, internet drops. Not pings because my mouth is too close to the microphone and you hear, but pings like the internet connection, the feed is dropping. The uplink is bad. So then they stop listening. They're like, I'd rather go listen to Mark Levin or Michael Medved or even Glenn Beck praying and crying and, oh God, whatever he's doing now. I haven't listened to him since Rafael Cruz dropped out. So I got to imagine he's still mourning. Got to imagine he's still crying. But go to the RobZakariShow.com. Seriously, go there and download the last, I'd say the last week's podcast. We're also on Spreaker. Like I'm trying to get the show up on as many places as possible. So if there's people that just listen on Spreaker, they could listen to the show. If there's people that just listen on iTunes, they can listen to the show. If they just listen on SoundCloud, we're going to be up there soon. If they want to just listen on the old YouTube, I'm trying to get it out there and have as many places could listen to the show. So there's my pitch. So we were talking about the Republican Party and where they are, what's going on, and how they're going to fix the situation. And I'm telling you, I don't see it getting fixed. I see it being broke, and I see the party splitting in half. The question is, who gets to keep the Republican name, and who is going to create the new name? It's like a band. It's like a rock band that splits up. Who is the solo act, and who is the band that continues on? And then when you watch that band, you say, is this Journey with the Filipino karaoke singer, or is this Journey with Steve Perry? Is this Van Halen with David Lee Roth, or is this David Lee Roth singing Van Halen songs when he was in the band, or is this that's what it is. Who's going to get the Republican name, and who's going to start the Republican Party offshoot? But they're not going to be the Republican Party. So after this election cycle, or during this election cycle, who knows? Because as we speak, you've got podcaster Eric Erickson, Bill Kristol, and a few other, I don't even know what, neoconservatives, constitutional conservatives, whatever they call themselves. You have them discussing a third party ticket, and they're going to have to decide really soon because there's cutoffs and deadlines and different requirements to get on all the ballots in all the states and yada yada yada. So that name might emerge very soon. That journey offshoot that that sticks offshoot that Queensryche offshoot might actually happen now instead of the next election cycle. Because the Republican Party is never going to go back to the way the establishment wants. Think about this, okay? You got to think about this. The 11, 12, or 13 million people that have resonated to Donald Trump's message are not going away. Okay? They're not going away. They're all not going to die. And the issues that they care about are a nuisance, so to speak. Or they are conflicted with what the establishment wants. Remember, the establishment wants open borders. Establishment wants amnesty. The establishment wants to grant citizenship to 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 million illegals. The establishment has no problem with sanctuary cities. You have 10, 11, or 12 million people that are not okay with that. So right out of the gate, you are constantly going to be at odds with over 10 million people. You're going to be at odds with them, plain and simple. The establishment, from Rubio to Jeb Bush, the list goes on, are all in favor of an open border policy. So 2016 happens. Trump loses by a landslide. He's done. You have a fractured party. You've got people working against Trump. From the Speaker of the House to Lindsey Graham to the Eric Ericksons to the SC Cups. I mean, think about this. You want to talk about scenarios. You want to talk about, again, a fractured party that's never going to heal. this resistance to Trump lasts, rather there's a third party run, or it's just a, we hate Trump, we're going to vote for Hillary, which is already happening. There's already establishment figures that have come out and said, I'm going to vote for Hillary. And it's being built up in the press as a big thing. If Trump loses, there's going to be a sense of not fair and square. There's going to be a deflate gate type of loss. There's going to be a sense of, well, Trump lost, and the millions and millions and millions of people that supported Trump will have the feeling, well, he lost because not only did he have Democrats against him, but he had the establishment against him. He actually had his own team against him. And Trump will be able to say, hey, imagine if everybody in my own party, everybody in my own family would have done what they were supposed to do, I would have won. You want to talk about a rigged system? You want to, you establishment types, you Trump haters. If your ears were bleeding every time you heard Trump say rigged system, and you were like, no, it's not rigged. If he loses, and you have the Eric Erickson's and the Mark Levin's and the SC Cups and the Bill Crystal's and the National Review for the next 6-7 months hammering Trump, saying he is so bad, we won't vote for him, and he's one of us. You want to talk about listening to someone bleed your eardrums with rigged system? Ho, forget about it. Forget about it. And what do you think's going to happen to the millions and millions and millions of people that supported Trump? What do you think they're going to remember? As after the election is done, and the establishment goes, okay, we've now cleansed ourselves of that albatross. We've now cleansed ourselves of the albatross. We went with that plan. We went with that platform, and it lost. And we're never going to do that again. So here's what we're going to do. Open borders. And it goes on. Doom, 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 doom. And guess what? Those 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 50, maybe 20 million. Maybe 25 million. But those millions and millions of people that voted for Trump, that supported Trump, are never going to get behind the Republican Party and the positions that they, the voters, were against 4 years before, especially when their candidate was sabotaged. So these millions and millions of people aren't going anywhere. That's the thing that baffles me. And what the Republican Party should be doing, what Paul Ryan should be doing, what Rance Priebus should be doing, what Lindsey Graham should be doing, is all getting in a room with Trump and saying, okay, how do we make these messages that at times are crude, at times are a little overreaching, but in principle are sound and what the people want? How do we make it more tolerable? You know, I'll give you an example. The Republican platform, okay? The Republican platform, pro-life. The Republican platform is pro-life. There are no exceptions. Now, to some of you, that's a shock because there are a lot. There are a lot of candidates that have the exception rule. John Kasich, pro-life, except rape, incest, or the woman's life is in danger. That's not the Republican platform. So you would think the party would retool that message. How do you have a platform that is pro-life under no exceptions, but you have a whole bunch of candidates that have exceptions? I mean, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. So everybody should get in a room. Now, this didn't just happen with Trump. That's just an example of how the Republican Party, year after year after year after year, conducts themselves in a bizarre, self-destructing way. I mean, it's a bizarre, self-destructing way. I gotta tell you, Democrats don't act like this. They really don't. Did you ever once hear a problem with rank and file Democrats when Nancy Pelosi, I know she's the devil, I know, but did you ever hear any problems with rank and file Democrats when Nancy Pelosi ran the House? Did you ever once hear a revolt? They were going to take Nancy Pelosi's speakership away. Hell, Nancy Pelosi had to bail John Boehner out. There were bills that Boehner couldn't get passed without going to Nancy Pelosi and saying, hey, can you get me 35 votes? I'm not going to get this bill passed. You know, Democrats don't have this problem. They don't. They don't have this problem. Maybe they had in the past, but in our lifetime, they don't have this problem. They do not have this problem. The the Republicans need to get in a room and have Trump, his advisors, and everybody say, okay, it's obvious that a open border situation is something that our party, the voters, don't want. It's obvious, because remember, guys, remember, when you hear somebody say from the establishment, well, you only have 10, 11, 12 million people that voted for Trump that have this hardline approach to immigration. Yeah, but that 10, 11, 12 million people you need to win a general election. The way the country is divided, you can't cast away 10, 12, 13 million people, 14 million people, 15 million people. You can't. You can't do it. And I know what some of you are saying. Yeah, but you take that hardline approach, you cast away the Latino population. And I have to remind you, no, considering that more than half of that population resides in California, sprinkle in Texas, and then sprinkle in Florida. And the Latino population in Florida don't consider themselves Mexican. They consider themselves Puerto Rican. They consider themselves Cuban. They don't consider themselves Mexican. They really don't. If you go to a Puerto Rican or you go to a Cuban and go, are you a Latino? Are you Mexican? What? Man, hell, I had someone work for me years ago who was from El Salvador. And if I said, are you Mexican? He would, are you kidding? Mexican. I'd be like, whoa. Getting a little crazy there, Francisco. No Mexican. I'm a Salvadorian. Okay, you're El Salvadorian. All right. All right. Okay. Had another one that was from Guatemala. I'm Guatemalan. Oh, Guatemala. It's not, okay, all right. So you're not alienating millions and millions of voters. Plus, let's face it. If these people were educated on the concepts of open borders and things of that nature, I don't feel there would be this one for all for one attitude amongst the Latino population. So they need to get into a room and say, okay, how do we take a position as it pertains to open borders? How do we take this? What do we do? The Muslim ban. What, when you hear everyone talk about this religious test.
Can't have a religious test. We can't have a... What are you going to do about King Jordan? What are you going to do?
And everybody knows not what Trump was talking about. And in theory, in a more sophisticated way of saying things, and remember, the appeal that Trump has is that he speaks like everyday Americans. But the sophisticated bill, the sophisticated way of saying what Trump has said about Muslims is the bill that Rand Paul introduced, which basically put a halt. It froze visas and things of that nature from countries that are hot spots for Islamic terrorists. So basically saying Syria, no. Saudi Arabia, no. And the list goes on from there. So you have these hot spot countries . Rather, it's Pakistan, and let's face it, Saudi Arabia is a hot spot country. The bride, the San Bernardino murderer, the San Bernardino terrorist, born in Pakistan, moved to Saudi Arabia, and then came to the United States. So that would be halted. There would be a vetting process, so to speak. Wouldn't be King Abdullah, but a migrant. So you would have the same concept as a Donald Trump Muslim ban. It would just be put in a sophisticated, more palatable policy. I mean, let's face it, guys. When somebody wants to come to this country, when you have these people fleeing from all of these countries, they go through a vetting process. They go through a whole interview process. And they're asked, well, why are you leaving? Well, I'm a Christian, and I'm in a country that is being overrun by Islamic jihadi terrorists. I'm a Yazidi, and they tried to cut my head off. So I fled. Well, you're asking them what their religion is right there. This notion that you're going to have TSA officers standing at airport checkpoints going, hey, yeah, are you a Muslim? Are you a Christian? Are you a Jew? And that's not the case. That's what the liberal media wants to put out there. But if you live in another country and you want to come to the United States, you got to get a visa. You have to go through a process. If you live in Mexico, you don't. You just, climb under a fence or hop over a 5-foot wall. But even some of them, about 4 or 5 million, get visas. So there's a process. So if you live in Iraq or you live in Saudi Arabia or Pakistan or wherever, Armenia, and you go, I want to come to the United States, you got to fill out paperwork. And you say, I want to come to the United States. Why do you want to come to the United States? Well, I want to go to Disneyland. I mean, there's a background check now, or at least there's supposed to be. There's supposed to be a process one has to go through to come into this country. So instead of saying no Muslims allowed, he just basically say we're halting immigration, we're halting visas, we're halting everything.
with these countries. End of story. We need to get our act together. We need to get our ship right. It's not you guys. I mean, that's all they have to say. That's all the platform has to say. That's all the policy has to say. You know, Obama's done great for the last 7 or 8 years apologizing to everybody and taking all the blame for every ill in this country and in this world. So you just keep that up for another month or two. And you say, all right, listen, it's not you guys. Hey, Iraq, it's not you. Hey, Saudi Arabia, it's not you. Hey, Pakistan, it's not you. Somalia, it's not you guys. You guys are awesome. It's us. We suck. Okay? We're just bad. We don't know. Our paperwork is bad. Everything we're doing is, we just don't know what we're doing. Okay? So what we got to do is just kind of stop right now. We just can't have people coming into the country at this particular moment until we get our crap in order. That's all. It's not you guys. You guys are awesome. It's us. It's us. So give us a little bit of time, and we'll let you know when we got our house in order, and then we, you know, start letting people in again, okay? All right, thank you. That's all. It's us. We're the F-ups. And this is what the Republican Party should be doing. Because all of these positions are positions that people like. Us not being the policemen of the world is a position that the voter likes. The people that don't like that are the neocons, the establishment. They don't like that. You know, these positions that Trump has, that people go, wow, God, that's just so what? Well, it's just not what we've done for the last 30 years. So what's that mean? What does that mean? I mean, it's bizarre that we are in a position as Republicans or even as a country where when it comes to foreign policy or other domestic programs, we have this position of, well, that's what we've done for 30 years. We're not going to change. End of story. But in every other aspect of our lives, it's all about change. It's all about change. Rather it's plastic surgery, rather you're a woman, you get your boobs done, you're a man or a woman, you get your stomach stapled, you lose weight, you gain weight. You get your nose done, you get your hair colored, get your hair cut, you get divorced, you get remarried, you have kids. Every aspect of our life is change. You have fax machines, you have computers, you have emails, you write letters, pens, you use pencil, yeah. Flip phones, iPhones, Blackberries, trains, planes. Every aspect of our life changes. Every aspect changes. But when it comes to our policies, it's supposed to stay the same. When you talk about NATO, You talk about something from 30, 40, 50 years ago. And people go, what are you talking about? You can't change that. You can't tinker with that. That's the cornerstone of our foreign policy, and it's been like that for the last 100 years. It's been like that for the last 50 years. You can't tinker with that. That's been a domestic policy for the last 50 years. Yeah, but it's kind of flawed. Yeah, okay, so we need to change it. No! It's like our government and people that have their little grubby fingers attached to these aspects of the government feed, and their families have fed, and their families off of those families have fed. And it's like this giant incestuous feeding tube. And it's just insane. It really is insane. And that's why the Republican Party going to be broken forever. Because you have people that ignore the 10, 12, 13, 14, 15, 20 million voters. You have the Paul Ryans and the Lindsey Grahams that say, you know what? I don't care what you people want. I don't care if you people think we should change direction. You people are stupid. You people are dumb. So we're going to fight you. The thing that you want, we're going to make sure it fails. Once it fails, we're going to tell you, ha ha. And then we're going to go back to the way we want to do things. And all of those people are not going to get on board. And the Republican Party's going to go through the same thing. So 4 years from now, the Republican Party says we will never have that happen again. Because remember, every 4 years when they write those rules, just like any, I discussed how Ted Cruz was doing the whole delegate thing. And it was like the Rice-A-Roni contests. Somebody found a way to win all the prizes in Rice-A-Roni if they bought, 6,000 boxes. They bought 6,000 boxes and it cost them $87,000. They would win every single prize, which would equal $500,000. So they went out and did it. They exploited a flaw in the system. So now the Republicans are going, okay, there was a flaw in the system. So they'll go and they'll make sure that 4 years from now that another Trump can never happen again. I mean, you've already heard the George Wills. You've already heard these people come out and say, we need to have a different process about how we pick a nominee. I mean, they're throwing around the idea of not having an open process as far as whoever wants to run for president can. If they get traction, they get traction. If they don't, they don't. And it whittles down until there's one man standing. They're already talking about saying you have to basically apply. You have to apply to the Republican Party. You have a process where the Republican Party will take applications. And then in those applications, they decide who will have the opportunity to compete for their nomination because it's their party. This isn't a pure democracy. So they're already getting ready to change the process so they never have a Trump phenomenon again. Remember, Democrats already have that. They have that with superdelegates. I mean, it's a little different than actually vetting people before they run. But ultimately, they have the power to kill a candidate. And it's so ingrained with Democrats that there is no rigged system. And, of course, all the media are Democrats, so they're not going to perpetuate the rigged system concept. The media is there to say, hey, superdelegates, that's the way it is, superdelegates. Rather, it's CNN, MSNBC, the list goes on, superdelegates. So the Republican Party's already putting into place. They get a list and they go, okay, who wants to run for our nominee? Okay, forget him. Forget her. Definitely forget him. All right. Here's the six people, because we're not going to have 16 again. We're not going to have 12 again. We're not going to have 10. We're going to have six people. And here are the six people. So all of you Republican voters, here's who you get to choose from. So they're already doing that. They're already putting that into place. Which will open the door for a third party, a splintering of the Republican Party. That's why I say in the beginning, instead of adopting and changing the platform, because this has been going on every 4 years. I mean, the Republicans have been dealing with a wing of their party who doesn't like the establishment. They don't like the people that are in charge. So they've been dealing with this for the last, 20 years? They've been dealing with this. Listen, 2010 was a shakeup. I mean, this transformation has been going on. And the parties always ignored it. It went on in 2000. There's always a candidate that gets traction in these primaries. And that traction is with people that don't like what the establishment is feeding them. Hell, it goes back to Bob Dole. But the establishment has always been able to snuff these things out. They've always been able to do a whack-a-mole type of thing. They've always been able to do it. But it's like cancer. And it's always been there, and it's just been growing. I mean, I don't like to call, myself cancer, but that's what it is. You know, we started as a tumor. We started as a tiny little tumor. And then every year, the tumor would grow and spread. And the Republican Party, the establishment, never dealt with the tumor. And they just kind of ignored it. They kind of ignored the lump. All right? They ignored the lump in their groin area. They ignored the lump in their breast. Year after year, it got a little bigger. And they just ignored it. I don't want to go. I'm too afraid. I don't want to go to the doctor. Everything's fine right now. It's a little uncomfortable, but I'm living, okay? I'm dealing with it. It hasn't interfered with the quality of my life, so it's all good. And here we are in 2016, and the tumor is cancer, and we've taken over the entire body. We've taken over the entire body. We've eaten it up. And it's not going away. We're that badass cancer, okay? We're the non-chemo cancer. I know comparing it to cancer is horrible. I know. But I couldn't come up with another analogy, all right? I just couldn't come up with another analogy that people deal with and ignore, and it grows and then it becomes overwhelming. I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry. But it's the truth. So the Republican Party has always known it was there. And it's not going away. And if Trump loses and gets hammered, it's not going to go away. Because all the supporters are never going to forget how the establishment didn't back the candidate. The establishment purposely went out of their way to sabotage their candidate. So when Trump is gone and the Republican Party, the establishment says, okay, now we can get on with our business and here's how we go ahead and pick a nominee. Here's the choices. Those millions and millions and millions and millions of people are going to say, F you. And the Republican Party will never, ever, ever win the White House. Because they will turn away anywhere between 15 and 20 million people. So there will be a fractured Republican Party. It's just a matter of who gets to keep the name. Because the establishment is never going to get on the same page with Trump. They're never, ever going to come together and say, okay, we'll change the platform on abortion. We'll change the platform on trade. We'll change the platform on immigration. We'll change the platform on Muslim bans. We'll change it. They're not going to do that. Not going to do that. So the question is, who gets the Republican name when the party splits?